For one who has not lived even a single lifetime, you're a wise man, Van Helsing.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity.
I am Dracula.
I am Dracula. We all are Dracula.
I really wish I could get his accent down and the way that he just speaks.
I've been trying to do the accent all week and I'm just not good at accents. The classic, I want to suck your blood.
Yeah. A quote that I loved was, enter freely and leave some of the happiness you bring.
Enter freely and happiness you bring.
Was that was good. Especially like the enter freely part. Do that again.
Enter freely.
Started to become like Italian.
Right.
All right. We are not impersonators, but we are people who have some knowledge of Dracula from a couple weeks worth of research. Also, Dracula is one of my favorite novels, probably top 10 favorite books for me.
Impressive.
Bram Stoker's Dracula. I first listened to it. Well, I listened to it on audiobook while I was a housekeeper in college, and I would listen to it while I was cleaning dorm rooms in the early morning at like 5 a.m., and it would be dark, and I got really scared because it's a pretty terrifying book.
I'm sure it is, and I love Dracula because of how hauntingly gory but yet enchanting Dracula feels like and is.
And Dracula is so iconic. And it's kind of weird that we've never talked about him on this podcast before, but I think one of the reasons is because he is such a prolific character that he exists. Like, do you remember when you first knew about Dracula?
I probably knew about Dracula when I was less than 10 years old.
Easily. Like, and you hadn't seen Dracula the movie, you hadn't read the book at that age.
No.
Like, Dracula is one of those characters that you just know because he exists in like every form of media. He finds his way into Sesame Street as the Count, when we're little kids. So
that's true.
He really is such an incredible character. And we also, I think, forget that there was a time when Dracula didn't exist. Like, before Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, like, Dracula wasn't a thing. And vampires were a thing. Like, they were a thing of myth before he wrote the book, but they were all kind of these beast-like creatures that were kind of gross and just scary. But then Bram Stoker's Dracula, I think, really solidified in our minds the idea that a vampire could be intelligent and well-mannered and still terrifying. And it's kind of shaped vampires for the rest of time.
Yeah, Dracula is like a forefather of villains.
Yeah. And now we see, I mean, so many different play and movie adaptations of Dracula, plus vampires really had a moment. And I think they're still kind of having a moment. I was really into the Vampire Diaries television show. There was the Twilight series.
Were you team Edward or team Jacob?
Oh, I'm always team vampire, for sure. I think there's a really sad beauty in the plight of the vampire. But we'll get into that.
Yeah, we will.
We've been rambling for a bit, and we still haven't done our 30-second intro challenge where we compete to do our best explanation of the villain in 30 seconds with absolutely no preparation. And afterwards, you can go on to Spotify if you're listening on Spotify, or even if you're not listening on Spotify, you can go on and vote for who you think did a better job.
And answer any other questions we have there, which we do not know what those will be.
Yeah, we sometimes post some questions on Spotify. Go check those out. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the episode about Dracula. Tiana, do you want to go first?
I think that because you're wearing an orange hat indoors and getting into the spirit of Halloween by looking like a pumpkin, I think you should go first.
I'm wearing an orange hat, listeners, because I'm cold, because I haven't turned my heat on yet. But also, the reason my hat is orange is because I like to go hiking and I don't want to get shot by hunters.
Nikes,
I didn't even consider the Halloween theme, but I guess that's an added bonus.
Right. No, I'm just kidding. I can go.
Great. Because you made me go first last time, so.
I'm sorry to be troublesome.
All right. Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. So Dracula, he sucks your blood. And he, he's just really disturbed. And he's been undead for a real long time. And he'll make you a vampire and you'll be undead. But the way to kill you would be to stab you in the heart and chop your head off. And he's been through a lot. He's experienced being undead, and that sucks.
Good job.
He will suck your blood. Disclaimer, this episode is gory and explicit.
Is it?
I should have warned you before. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Dracula, gory and explicit, and in a lot of ways, like, really kind of sexual in a dark.
Oh, really sexual.
Yeah.
It's erotic. There was literally a lady having sex with a beast in the 1992 movie.
Yeah. The 1992 movie really leaned into the eroticism of the story, which I think was present to some degree in the original novel, but not so explicit as it was in Francis Ford Coppola's 1992 film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just got really hungry. Maybe I'll
drink some blood. Yeah. Are you going to count me in or what?
3, 2, 1, go.
All right. Dracula is a vampire who lives in this big old castle, and he is trying to move to England, I think, so that he can drink other people's blood and expand his reach. And so he tries to do that, but ultimately he messes with the wrong dude, Jonathan Harker, who gets help from Abraham Van Helsing. And together they fight him off and try to defeat him.
Great. Good job.
Thank you. Again, you can go on Spotify and vote for who you think did a better job with this intro.
And then you can vote for who is the sexiest Dracula. Me.
Or you can vote for me too, but whatever.
Yes.
Do what you want to do. I wanted to start with a quotation from the novel, the words of Mina Murray, who is Jonathan Harker's bride in the novel, and he's someone that Dracula feeds upon. And this quote really stood out to me. She says, "Though sympathy alone can't alter facts, it can help to make them more bearable." And I thought that spoke really well to our podcast.
Yeah.
Because one thing we always talk about is how we're not like forgiving people for their terrible actions. And so like Mina says, like our sympathy and our empathy can't change the fact that someone did terrible things, but it can help us make better sense of them so that we can approach those situations and those ideas in a healthier way, I think.
Yeah, I really like that.
And I also wanted to kind of do a rundown on Dracula. Because I think that modern vampire stories, they've told us a few kind of specific things about what vampires' skills and weaknesses are, but Dracula, I feel like, could do a lot more. He had a lot more specific skills. So In the novel, in the original novel, he was said to be as strong as 20 men. He could like climb up the sides of castles and buildings. He had the ability to shapeshift. It's not clear all what he was able to shapeshift into, but wolves, bats, rats, dogs, sometimes the mist, which is pretty cool. He could control the weather. He has some kind of an ability to like mesmerize and control people. he develops like a psychic connection somehow between the people that he tries to transform into vampires. And then most obviously, as a vampire, he can turn other people into vampires.
That's the coolest part.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one of the scariest parts. Now, right. On the other hand, his weaknesses are crosses. He can't stand a cross. garlic. The daytime, the sun doesn't actually like destroy him, but it does kind of make him really weak, and he loses all of his powers during the day. For some reason, he has to rest in the soil from his homeland. So in the novel, he has to bring these giant boxes of soil from Romania to England so that he can sleep at night. He can't cross running water at certain times. I think it was like high tide and low tide. He can't cross running water. And holy wafers, which I didn't know were not, they're not something I've ever experienced. But I guess it's like,
yeah, those delicious wafers just just really make you weak. Tastes so good.
Forgot one. He can't enter a place without being invited, which I think is one of the most famous things about vampires.
I didn't catch that. Okay.
Oh, really?
He's never going to crash your wedding.
No. Well, it depends where your wedding's at. He can't pass into a home unless he's invited in.
That makes a lot of sense because he's very intentional about inviting someone into a place.
Yep.
And maybe that's why. Like when Harker came, he was like, please come in and welcome to my home. And he said that twice to intentionally invite Harker. Of course, Harker can enter any place without being invited, but maybe just that constant like practice of needing to be invited somewhere makes him try to invite other people to help them out.
Yeah. To me, like one thing that I was constantly wondering was like why these weaknesses, like why is he so afraid of the cross? Why is he so afraid of holy wafers?
But the garlic is the one that really boggles my mind.
Well, so I did a lot of reading into this. And so it sounds like in Romania in particular, and I think it's pretty well known or discussed, at least in among botanical people or alternative medicine folk, that garlic has like, I don't know what the word is, like antiseptic or antimicrobial properties. And it for many years has been used very heavily for treatment of illnesses. And so from what I understand, vampirism for a long time as a myth was sort of like a disease. And they thought that like that garlic was a way that they could ward off the sickness of the vampire, basically.
I see. Yeah, I thought maybe Bram Stoker just didn't really care for the garlic. I don't know.
Yeah. The other stuff, the cross, the sunlight, not being able to enter an abode, there is not really any kind of solidified answer. But I just watched the Dracula series on Netflix, which was produced by BBC, I think. It's done by the same guys who did Sherlock. So it's it's a very similar type of show, and I really loved it. It does not follow the novel, but I think it borrows very heavily from it, and I think it's very true to the heart of the Dracula story. And so this is a major spoiler, because one of the themes of the show is like trying to figure out where his fear of the cross comes from. And so the end of the show, Van Helsing realizes that these weaknesses stem from his own self-hatred and shame, and his belief that he deserves to be in the shadows and that he doesn't deserve to be alive, but he's so scared of death that he can't confront it. So not being able to enter without being invited, that's like his sense of like not having any self-worth. And not being able to be in the sunlight is like this idea that he doesn't deserve to be out in the open. And the cross is a reminder of how, I think, how Jesus so nobly faced his own death on the cross.
That's a lot deeper than I thought it would be.
Yeah. And I really like this explanation, because what it comes down to is that these things are not, like, there's not some magical force that keeps him from entering a place. It's this shame that's so buried deep inside of him that he cannot overcome it.
Yeah. It's like drawing upon his insecurities.
Yeah. Like it's so deep that he doesn't really even understand it.
Yeah, that's really compelling.
Yeah. And I think that's an idea that a lot of us can relate to because, I mean, at least like personally myself, I've been seeing a therapist for a few years. And one of the things I've been learning, which I don't like, I find very annoying, that there are things that affect my behavior that I don't understand. Like that there are these deep-seated feelings and beliefs inside of me that I don't consciously believe in. But for some reason, they still affect the way that I act out in the world. I think the common example, that a lot of people face on different levels is childhood trauma, whether that be, physical or emotional or even like totally accidental or minor. These things that happen to you when you're young can manifest in ways that you were not aware of, but they're still affecting your relationships later on in life. Like you develop these defense mechanisms inside of yourself that are hard to let go of when you get older and you may not even be aware of them.
Yeah, I can relate to that too. Am I brave enough to share an example right now? I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to.
But no, I totally understand that.
And I feel that I have been really rambling this episode so far because I'm so taken by vampires and Dracula in particular. I'm so excited about talking about him. What are your thoughts?
No, I totally understand that because he's so enchanting and captivating to me. I love like his aesthetic. Like he's horrifically enchanting.
Mm.
And that's just so beautiful to me. And I don't know who else would be able to really pull something like that off except for Dracula. But yeah, to empathize with him, I thought, yeah, it'd be quite the predicament when your source of fuel is blood. That's pretty inconvenient. And I was like, yeah, I can have some sympathy for that.
Yeah. Well, not to interrupt, but on that note about how sad it is, his desire for blood, I think that's really like the ultimate curse of the vampire. Like the saddest part of their existence is that they have this insatiable desire for blood and they cannot develop relationships. Like how can a vampire fall in love with someone when they have just this unending desire to destroy that thing? And then like to top it all off, if they do, they have to live with the consequences forever. Even if they resist the urge to like drink the blood of someone that they care about, they still have to watch that person die while they live on for the rest of eternity.
Yeah, I watched the 1992 Dracula by Francis Coppola. Francis Ford Coppola. And I really liked that movie. And Gary Oldman is incredible.
And Keanu Reeves is Jonathan Harker.
And Keanu Reeves. I mean, I would say Gary Oldman kind of went a few levels higher. Went a few levels higher than Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is great, but I was also reading something where people were like criticizing his British accent. Mm. Anywho.
What I didn't understand about that film was how Mina fell in love with Dracula.
Right. Yeah. They didn't really mention that. And so my random theory was just that maybe she is a descendant of Dracula's fiance that died by the hands of the Turks, well, by suicide / by the hand of the Turks. And so maybe they were drawn to each other in that way. There's some kind of bond that was there. Yeah. That's just my theory, though. Like, we don't actually really know.
I didn't think about it at the time, but he probably also had some kind of, because he has this like mesmerizing skill that he probably was using as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. He probably smelled good.
He never has garlic breath.
Oh, you're right.
Jonathan's probably munching on garlic all day.
Ew. I'm not going to marry you. I'm going to become undead.
Like, finally a guy who takes care of his teeth.
Yeah. And so just imagine that you have been alive and pale and drinking blood and dodging the sun for 450 years or so, searching for your love, and or like searching for satisfaction with
Yeah.
Some kind of satisfaction. Yeah.
And you have infinity more years to go.
You're alive for so long, but you just remain empty. Like, even the blood doesn't satisfy you because you feel like you have to keep drinking the blood for as long as you're undead. Just imagine just like wandering the earth like that. And he's in pain. Like, the reason in the 1992 movie why he became a vampire is because he was in so much grief and pain that he did some weird things with a cross and some water and did some creepy stuff and became a vampire because he was in pain. So, like, in both the book and that 1992 movie, the ending to me was so powerful. When he died, he was finally at peace. And, like, this contrast between how he was as the undead and actually dead, and how peaceful he looked in actual death. This contrast was really sad to me because it confirms how much grief he experienced and how much pain he was in that many years as a vampire. I, like, can assume that in the novel, even though it doesn't give him much of a backstory, that he's still in anguish or, like, in search of something to assuage pain. Otherwise, why would he have lived so long, like, or staying undead so long, haunting people and drinking their blood?
Well, like, that's why I really like the idea in the Netflix series of Dracula that he is just absolutely terrified of death. Because you're right. There's no way that he's not living in absolute anguish all the time. And it's like, so why doesn't he just let someone kill him? Because he's terrified of death. And then it's almost like this moment, just such a beautiful moment when he does finally get to die and all of that anguish can be over. And even though he couldn't bring himself to let himself die, he finally gets to. And that's nice for him.
I kind of saw him as this metaphor for sometimes what you can feel like as a person going through grief. Because I think when we go through grief, sometimes we kind of walk around a little bit like we're undead. Like, we're alive, but we're also not really there. Like, we're in a lot of pain and sadness and grief. And we go through life as a normal human, and we have to keep going through life as a normal human because we have to go to work. We have other obligations, but we're numb. And sometimes we act like we're searching for the person or thing that we lost. And that thing, it could also be a thing like hope or sanity or something, right? But sometimes it feels like you're in a desperate search for like a person or the thing that you lost, even though you can't have it back. And it takes a long time to get to that acceptance stage of grief. And then I felt like Dracula's version of the acceptance stage in grief was his death.
Yeah, I love that metaphor. And another like way to tie into that metaphor, the idea that he has to, that he can't leave his home. Like, he can't get back out there. Like, he always has to come back and rest in the soil of his house.
Yeah. Moment of silence for Dracula.
I mean, he murders a lot of people, and
yeah,
at least in the original novel, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about the fact that he's a bad dude, and they've got like, it's a good versus evil story. It is not sympathetic towards him, but I think when you examine the plight of a vampire at all, it's pretty easy to find sympathy because it is just so sad. I just keep coming back to this like uncontrollable urge to like destroy the people around you and how alienating that must be.
Right. And you feel like you have to in order to maintain your undead state and not actually die.
You have to drink that blood in order to survive. I don't remember in Twilight, but in the Vampire Diaries, the good vampires would like steal from blood banks and I think they would try to get by on animal blood also, but it never really like fulfilled them in the same way that like sucking blood from a human did.
Right.
I don't know if Dracula ever thought about using blood banks, or he might not have been around long enough for blood banks to exist.
That also reminded me that I thought it was funny when Lucy was losing blood, or it looked like she was losing blood because she was becoming a vampire.
As Dracula was taking a significant, he was coming and drinking from her, so she did have less blood.
Right. Yes. And I just like how Van Helsing was like, come on, men, give her the blood. And I was like, oh, I guess they don't know much about like blood types during this period. Yeah. They're just like, give blood, whatever.
And that's the same in the book too. Van Helsing is just like, let's just hook him up.
Maybe she was kind of lucky. Maybe she was type O.
Ultimately, she wasn't. She wasn't lucky. They had to right. They had to stake her and cut off her head. Also, side note, interesting vampire thing I learned. So a lot of people believe that like a wooden stake through the heart kills a vampire, but from what I read. It's actually like it doesn't have to be wooden. It can just be a stake. And that it's actually the point of the stake is to hold them down so that you can cut their head off. So you stake them into the ground and then you can chop the head off without having to worry about them getting back up. So in case you ever meet a vampire.
Oh, yeah. If I was still living in Washington, you never know. I could find an Edward.
Oh, yeah.
Right outside my door.
Yeah. Vampires, like, so, I mean, they've really come to be synonymous with seduction. I don't think that was, like, a huge part of Bram Stoker's Dracula. I think there were hints of it. Yeah, you look like you have something to say.
Well, I guess you would know that better than I would because you actually read the book. However, isn't it true that, like, the book itself kind of had this theme of, like, purity versus impurity and, in a way, like, the book itself giving a message of being pro-purity because it's like a metaphor for what happens when women are impure and enticed by men. They become whorish and seductive, and then they seduce other men and they are impure. Mm. Impurity equals being a vampire in the book. So I got the sense, at least, that Bram Stoker was in a way using the book to tell us how bad impurity can be of a man or a woman, but especially of a woman.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of scholarly writing about this. And I think, and kind of across the board, like a few different readings of the novel and how it relates to those ideas. And I wish I had had time to really delve into them more because it was really academic heavy reading. And I tried, and I just didn't have the time before this podcast. But I think you're right on track with that idea of purity versus impurity. I also saw some stuff about the possibility of the vampire as a metaphor for homosexuality.
Oh.
The penetration of the skin and the sucking of the blood. And obviously not a great way to think about it. It does point to homosexuality as a disease, which is not good. I read some like rumors about Bram Stoker being possibly gay himself, and maybe that was coming out, like a feeling of shame was being written into the character of Dracula. I don't know.
Right.
And so don't take any of this as fact.
And this book was written in like
1897.
Yeah, so, like, I wasn't very surprised by the theme of, like, being for purity and the anti-impurity theme.
I also saw, and again, I didn't read these, but I did see a lot of articles about strong feminist themes in the novel as well.
Mm, right.
And that's something I'm probably going to go back and read more about because I'm interested in hearing more about that. But
if you read something that's interesting, let me know. But I was just going to say that I feel like Dracula is pro-sex, I think. Because, right, he is the man of seduction and impurity, and he is what people were warning against in the story. And I was like, well, it's 2021 now. We can embrace the impurity, embrace the seduction and power that Dracula has in some ways.
And, like, not having to suppress our desires.
Yeah.
Like, it's not okay that society tells us that some of the things that we desire are bad.
Right.
No, I would argue I guess, that like sucking other people's blood without their consent is certainly wrong.
Yeah.
Regardless of the situation. But as a metaphor, I think it works.
Right.
Whether or not you can suck someone's blood consensually.
That, I think you can do that. Because I give blood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I give blood too.
So if I consented and I was like, yeah, let's do something kinky. And I was like, okay, suck my blood.
Yeah, I guess that's all right. Something like, and maybe this is bad of me, but it's like something feels like there's like an inherent wrong with that, even with consent. But maybe with consent, it's fine. I'm not sure about this one.
Maybe because you're nervous about like an infection. You're nervous that an infection on a wound.
Yeah, an infection or disease transmission, or just like doing it incorrectly and like killing someone. Well, you could like hit an artery and know, like there's that big artery in your neck, and what if that person bled out?
Oh my god, you're right.
But
how about, yeah,
you could do it safely, right?
You just have to have a doctor in the bedroom with you, be like, okay, that's fine.
There are a lot of dangerous sexual things that people do
where
both people are consenting and they are aware of the risks and they've taken the necessary safety precautions. So I guess it's okay. But just for you listeners out there who are interested, I'm not an expert on any of this stuff, but make sure you take the appropriate safety precautions and make sure that you have a 100% consensual partnership with the person that you drink their blood, and that you talk about drinking their blood before the throes of passion, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's the key. Don't do it in the moment. Talk about it beforehand so everyone knows what's going to happen.
And if a doctor writes to us and is like, please, no one even try that, don't do it, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. We've already released the podcast at that point.
Yeah.
Anyways, the vampire is an interesting metaphor in a lot of ways. In some ways sad, but I think this is one way where we can see the vampire is sort of like liberating us from like the clasp of purity, which had a tight rein on, at least in the US and I'm sure around the world, for many, many years. This idea of purity was so important and it had so many negative consequences. I'm in New England, and so I'm near Salem where the witch trials happened. And a lot of that terrible stuff happened because of this idea of purity and the fact that these people were being witches, or they were in covenant with witches, and so they were not impure, so they needed to be hanged. A lot of bad stuff has happened because of purity, and so I think vampire as a metaphor for liberation is a cool idea.
Yeah, but suck blood consensually.
Yes.
Yeah.
Liberate yourself in a way that is respectful to other people.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. That's all I had.
Yeah, I think that's all I had too. And if you don't stop me, I could just kind of rant for a while. But I think that we should probably move on. We've heard enough of me today. I would like to hear from you, Tiana, because apparently you have written a Dracula poem.
I have, and this poem is not for the faint of heart. It is gory, it is bloody, it is not for your child. And I think sometimes, like, cis men might not like it very much, but...
Also, cis men make up very little of our listenership. Spotify tells us our listeners are, like, 80% women and non-binary folks, and like 20% men. Though I think we hear from men the most often. All you non-men, feel free to contact us.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to your poem introduction.
But yeah, it might scare cis men, but it doesn't have to scare them. They can also just accept it.
Yeah, I would say, and I haven't heard the poem, but maybe it shouldn't scare cis men.
Right.
Just like,
but it might. And hang in there and just listen to it anyway. It's Halloween. Happy Halloween.
Oh, yeah. We got this far in the episode and we haven't mentioned we're doing Dracula, this iconic villain, because of the fact that it's Halloween today. And I think this is the first year our podcast episode has fallen on the actual day of Halloween.
Yeah. I'm so glad we remembered that. Happy Halloween. All right, here's the poem. This is called Dracula Has Her Period. I wake and I'm frothing at my mouth. When you wake and don't have enough blood, sparrows outside sound louder than usual. Everything seems a little more blatant than usual. I wonder what it would be like to hold the sparrow against the edge of my mouth with its smooth feathers gracing my teeth, politely fluttering as I contemplate a chomp. I'm sorry, I'm not usually like this. But I do walk in the dark sometimes, like I am now. Have you ever woken to be replenished in the pale moonlight like this? Have you ever chosen the 3 a.m. crawl to the rest of the house, red eyes locked and loaded? Have you ever said to night shadows, you're never getting rid of me? Like me? I'm not usually like this, but tonight, I'm walking into the dark, and if you're standing there, I'd ask, with my hands over your face, where is my blood? And why does the blood leave my body like dying warriors falling from cliffs at the end of horrendous battle, using their swords to scrape and hold onto the edges in a last-ditch attempt at surviving? I'm not usually like this, but right now I crawl to cupboards after a few hours on a tile floor in pain, and I'll tell you, and all the night shadows go away, or I'll grab you too, share with you the essence of oceans and pants. And if you brought home garlic earlier, I'll caustically say that the CDC told you to throw them out because there's a salmonella outbreak. In garlic, why would you bring them? And I'd hysterically cry, because you know, garlic. I am a walking pane of a woman in a nightshirt that doesn't fit me tonight. And I'll ask you to remember when you played with your friends in the scorching sun, and when you were thirsty, and when you wanted tap water so bad you ran to your mom. But I'll say it's what I'm feeling right now is kind of like that, But it feels like your underbelly is opening at the same time. And I'd get on my knees and yell, of course, the ability to create a living being from the blood of my body comes with the price of this pain, of this loss. I'm not usually like this. But just after every full moon, I am undead. I am Dracula. And so for this once, please appease me. Where is my blood? I need it. And in a few hours, I'll go to work and sit at my desk pleasantly, and the sparrow will be outside my window, still alive.
Wow, great.
No, don't. You don't have to do that. Joe is snapping and pretending that he heard the poem, even though it was recorded later and inserted later. Anywho, thank you so much for listening. Have a great Halloween. If you are dressing up as any villains, please, please send it to us via email or on Instagram or anywhere. Our social media is at NextDoorVillain on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Our email is nextdoorvillain@gmail.com, and our TikTok is at NextDoorVillainPodcast. And please rate us. Please give us 5 evil stars. And yeah, happy Halloween. Go scare someone.